We will not be doing anything on House Bill 3232, I don't think, today. So those of you who are here for House Bill 3232, we didn't have any interest in the R&D tax credit, so we're looking at other options for those resources. But we will do 1083. We're going to open a public hearing on 3481, and we're going to do House Bill 2542. Open a... And, Don, we're going to need you on 1083, so whoever's there, you can let them know. So we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1083. Is there anyone who has not had a chance to testify on this bill that would like a chance to testify on 1083? Okay, we'll call the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 1083, and... Paul, if you could talk to us about the dash threes, and I don't know, Sam, do you help work on the dash threes, or no? You don't.
He's denying everything. Mr. Chair, I have had a chance this morning to look at the dash threes in terms of the revenue implications. They are still a fair amount higher than the original 1083, as you recall, was tied to the minimum wage for the agriculture sector and those minimum wage workers. By this one is more closely tied in terms of the individuals who receive the minimum wage amounts, but the dollar adjustments or the calculation of the credit is at 17.5 cents, and the original bill was in terms of the incremental change from year to year. And what I've done is look at the estimate of what the minimum wage will be, and you can see that on the far left column. It's rounded to the nearest nickel. And then the percentage change in the May forecast for the U.S. CPI and the change from the base. The changes from the base, are billed upon themselves. And the credit reflects the change from the base. And it's 17.5 cents in 06, 35 cents in 07, and then it's adjusted for inflation. So in other words, it goes up about 2% from that 35 cents number. The original 1083 looked at the change that was attributable to the change in the CPI, and then provided a 50% credit for that. So I've applied it to the agricultural employment estimated to be at the minimum wage, and you can see what the credit would be, the expected use. I just have a kind of a lag factor in there, what the expected use of the credit would be. Remember, it is a marketable credit. So the impact of for the 1 year in 05-07 would be about $3.8 million. Then it would level off in the $18 to $20 million range as that credit would be and would be growing incrementally from 35 cents per hour of work.
Questions for Ms. Warner?
Well, I don't know if it's actually for Mr. Warner, Mr. Chair, but I would... one aspect about this that, there's two questions that I would have. Number one would be, we had some testimony yesterday regarding that the way the bill was written, 1083, that it encompassed greater than some of the agricultural activities that we were trying to get to. And I was wondering if the dash 3 changes that at all. And then secondly would be the questionable about the marketable credit. We also had the discussions regarding the large farms and that don't need this and trying to help family farms. And that kind of struck a chord with me. I think people who have a real need for this to stay, keep their family farm in operation should use that. But when I start thinking of marketable credits, I think of corporations who use this as a financing tool, not as a way to sustain agriculture. Mm-hmm. That obviously is still in here. But I guess on the first question, have we changed anything in terms of how this is targeted based on the testimony yesterday? Does this dash 3 change anything?
It's targeted. The change, Senator Metzger, is it's targeted at those with lower or those at minimum wage, essentially, which is that's why the employment effects are estimated at 12 to 13,000. We've included the same group of agricultural industries. It's just that we've limited those to 690 per hour, and then further adjusted for inflation. So that's the minimum wage component. So you're not getting a higher paid workers credit for that. However, the breadth of it in terms of the industries is the same as the original 1083. The marketability issue. Frankly, we don't have a lot of experience with marketable credits. We've looked at it in a number of areas. It certainly makes it more attractive to those firms who have real erratic net income or have a prolonged period where they have no net income. It obviously makes it an attractive feature for them. And those that would be interested are those who obviously do have some net income that they can use it. So the marketability works in terms of making it more attractive for those that would be eligible for the credit but don't have a use for it, as well as those that may have, that have the tax liability. Usually what you're going to see is those, and my understanding is that when we've seen marketable credits, they'll sell at, 85 to 90 cents on the dollar.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Starr.
We're showing a growth in the number of employees at the minimum wage related to agriculture. Having worked in the field most of my life, I've noticed a shrinkage in available hand harvest crops as mechanization of crop harvest has gone forward. In fact, I had some fairly large family farm blueberry growers who last season, because of the declining advantage of a hand harvested product, chose to send their pickers all home and hire a machine to come in and pick the crop. And I'm wondering whether we're truly experiencing the growth. Is that growth going to be in the nursery crop? I guess maybe somebody that's more directly involved today in agriculture than I've been recently might shed some light on that. But I do know I've been real close, particularly to the blueberry industry, and it's one of the really growing sectors in that it is a machine harvestable crop.
Mm-hmm. Senator Starr, certainly though that factor would affect it over time. This estimate is not a scientifically derived one. The economic and revenue forecast is based on the payroll employment survey. I mean, that's normally what you see when the state economist comes in, and that has the detailed sector by sector estimates and forecasts. But the ag sector is not included in that survey. And if you look at the fine print on the state economic forecast, is non-farm payroll employment. So we don't have a good sound forecast from year to year the way we do with the other sectors. My estimate here is based on 1% growth a year, which would imply that the employment in this sector would shrink relative to the economy. So I'm assuming a shrinking share because of automation and a number of other factors. I mentioned yesterday international trade and so forth that may influence that. But it's also a broad sector, as you've talked about, including nursery and some other sectors that have exhibited growth.
Senator Starr and Senator Pransky. I would like to move the dash 3 amendments and then we can further discuss the issue. Sure. And we'll just, we've got a couple folks, but let's go ahead and put the dash three. So Senator Starr's moved the dash three amendments. Further discussion, Senator Brzezinski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yesterday when I, part of the testimony I did here, I had the impression that Senator Schrader had heard some of the concerns of some of the individuals that had brought forward regarding the broadness of the application of the credit, and that I thought it was going to be narrowed some. Maybe I misunderstood what was being articulated yesterday, but from what I'm hearing from Mr. Warner, it sounds like we really haven't done anything different in that area. And I know that you're going to have some people come up and testify or give some statements. I'd like to have Mr. Nesbitt come up. I think he was the one that was speaking about it as to those concerns. I just want to make sure we have the complete record.
Sure, sure. Well, Tim, do you want to take that first? Then we'll have Mr. Schellenberg and Mr. Ashcomer signed out.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tim Nesbitt, president of the AFL-CIO Oregon. We appreciate the efforts to accommodate our concerns, and those efforts have been made by Senator Schrader and by representatives of the Farm Bureau and others, but we don't see how we can get there. We're looking at a dash three now, which has even a greater revenue impact next biennium and in future biennia. I had a conversation with Senator Schrader last night. We kind of ended up agreeing to disagree, and the senator said, well, maybe we should just go back to the original bill, which actually has a lower revenue impact. The concerns we have continue to be the broad scope. We have a common interest here, or I think I sense a common purpose among all of us working on this issue, that it can be a good public purpose to subsidize employment, to subsidize certain employers, to support and keep jobs. Even if they're minimum wage jobs, at least now we have a minimum wage which ensures that workers who work full-time don't have to live in poverty. So those are jobs worth sustaining. But we have a model here, a tax credit, which I think is just really hard to wrestle into a form where the subsidy goes to the employers who need it most, who are, you know, suffering from the competitive forces you've heard about, which kind of put them at a disadvantage. So my personal view on this is that we'd be much better served with kind of a competitiveness fund. Take the amount of money you're looking at for the next biennium, give it to the Department of Agriculture, let them figure out who needs it to sustain jobs. But doing it in the form of a tax credit, it just spreads the money across employers who both need and don't need it for reasons which make sense and don't make sense. So I continue to hear that my idea coming to you as late as it is too different and too late. But that's the best advice I can give you for where I think we ought to go.
Senator George and Senator Metzger.
Tim, thank you for being here this morning. But there's an issue that when we first heard about this bill, and I want to thank Senator Schrader for bringing it forward, first thing that I thought was, wow, maybe we can afford to provide health care for some of those folks that, you know, we bring on temporarily. I mean, that was the first thought into my mind. I've talked to other farmers. It was the first thought into their mind. And, I mean, there's no other way to go. We can't transfer increased costs. But we took an increase. I didn't vote for that. Yet we're paying increases. Now, that may be a good thing. But I'm going to tell you this. There's no way for an agriculturist to transfer those additional costs onto the consumer, you know, like a big business could. So it is a case where we're caught between a rock and a hard spot, and our employees are suffering because of it.
Makes those incremental changes.
Mr. Chair and Senator George, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think that's the common point of view we share here, and I especially like your reaction to the health care issue. That was what I thought up too. I mean, maybe we can be proposing that this kind of a subsidy be limited to jobs that provide health care. All the better.
Senator Metzger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I had the same impression as Senator Brzezinski yesterday. Because what we're trying to get at least what I think we're trying to get at in my discussions over a number of years and then with Senator Schrader moving forward is trying to really target those types of farmers, particularly family farms, to make paying profit in a global marketplace in which we can't control everything, but some things in which we see a value of doing that. And in the definition that we have in the Dash 3, it is all-encompassing. It not only includes raising, harvesting, and selling crops, but it's also breeding, management, fur-bearing animals, the dairy products, and we have some very successful dairies that don't rise to the same situation that we're talking about, people with row crops and seasonal crops. It also includes horse shows, stabling, training horses, and there's some nice, you know, riding in arena in Lake House Wiggle, but I don't think that's what we want to target. I would really support narrowing this down to the first paragraph of that definition, farm use meaning the employment of land for the primary purpose of attaining a profit in money by raising, harvesting, and selling crops. I mean, and letting the rest of it, you know, go. I mean, I think that's what, when I hear from the struggling agriculture industry, I'm talking about the tree fruit industry, I'm talking about, the sugar beets, the corn, all the different types of crops in which we really do have a struggle with. A lot of these people would be able to main that into agricultural production. But I don't think it's the dairy farm and up the Columbia River Gorge. I don't think it's the stables in Lake Oswego that need these credits. And I would really, I think this is an easy thing to do. I'd like to have permission to have an opportunity to draft a more narrow view. I think we can do that within a matter of hours. And look at it from that standpoint.
We were looking for that book.
We found it.
We were looking for the definition of farm use. Senator Starr.
To some degree, I certainly agree with Senator Metzger. But we do still have a number of family dairy farms. Not all the milk is being produced on the giant dairies. And I'm telling you, those few dairy farmers in Tillamook and Washington County and others that are still milking a small stream are right up against it, just struggling day to day to pencil out a profit. And so I think we could broad brush this and still miss some really important segments of our agriculture that's important to the family farmer, the true family farmer that's still out there trying to make a living from the land.
Thank you. That's good. Tim, did you have any other questions for Tim? Because I want to bring Don and Scott are signed up. Thank you, Mr. Nesbitt.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Senator Metzger, to your question, I think I'm amenable to that of taking a few more hours to hone in on the language. Yes, Don and Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. On the issue that you've been talking about, I agree with what Senator Starr just said. It's the whole agricultural industry is being hurt by an increased wage base. Senator George and Senator Starr both made that quite abundantly clear. There may be some minor parts of that, of the riding arena, boarding, those are very minor things, very few places that do that kind of thing. It isn't, you could draft it that way, and I guess it would be okay. Part of the problem is, I don't know how the Revenue Department, when you turn those in, how are they going to know? They don't know what that's from, what your farm income is, whether it's from that or anything else. So I'm not sure you can go down that road and accomplish what you want to do, though I understand, Senator Metzger, what your concern is. On the size of the operation, I would suggest to you that agriculture does enterprise farming. You have three or four different enterprises, different commodities, and you don't keep farming the commodity that isn't profitable, because you're making profit in another commodity and you have the ability to subsidize that. When you don't do that, you get rid of that commodity when it's not profitable. And so to narrow it that way would not be practical as well by commodity. There's a few other comments that I would like to make, Mr. Chair, regarding yesterday's comments. In Idaho, it was mentioned they use H-2A workers. Checked with the Idaho Employment Department, they do use 700 H-2A workers, and that's out of 33 to 35,000 peak employment. And those are all used as sheep herders or irrigators, none used in harvesting, pruning, in crop production in that manner. So I don't think that's an argument that can be made. They're still mostly 515 minimum wage in Idaho. Pruning and harvesting exemption was mentioned. Again, that's a very small exemption. It's only for growers who have 500 hours of man day labor in a quarter. That's pretty small. So there is that exemption, but it doesn't apply to most people who do pruning or hand harvesting. Transferring of credit, Senator Metzger. The issue there is that it's an option, as Mr. Warner indicated. It's really an option for the small guy. It's an advantage to him. They are more often probably the ones that have erratic income, and it's up to them. If they want to sell that credit, fine, and it gives them an opportunity to do that. If they don't want to, they don't have to. There isn't any requirement that they do that. So we see that really as simply an option, and particularly helpful probably to the smaller grower. I guess Mr. Warner, talked about what the difference in the bill is. Appreciate that explanation. So that's the comments I'd like to make. We do support the Dash Series. Would recommend adoption of that, and would be happy to answer any of the questions that you might have.
Thanks. Mr. Ashcombe.
Thank you. Scott Ashcombe with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just want to mention one item, that the purpose of 1083 is to forestall the attrition of jobs, is to do something to slow the loss of the jobs themselves, the migration of the jobs themselves to other states which have a different minimum wage. So the question of narrowing the scope of the bill, which is accomplished in the Dash 3 amendments to just those workers who are at minimum wage, and providing the credit just to for increases in wage that are attributable to the increase in the minimum wage, that is a significant narrowing of the scope of the application of this tax credit to a much smaller group of employers or employees than are covered in 215-203. The definition of farm use in 215-203 is intended to cover both the revenue statutes and for the land use planning statutes, all activities that are really farm, that great diverse universe of businesses that are farming businesses, agricultural businesses in the state. The Dash 3 amendment narrows the scope of the tax credit to just those workers that are at minimum wage. As the minimum wage increases, and the employer has to make each year the decision whether or not he's going to retain that job or whether he's going to let that job go, that's a significant narrowing of the tax credit to just those individuals and not the workers that are employed for farm use in 215-203. This bill is about stopping the attrition and migration of jobs out of state, and the tax credit will help us to do that. I might say that with regard to Senator Starr's question about the 1% growth in agricultural employment in the state. The Department of Agriculture study indicated that last year there was a loss of agricultural workers, and they attribute that loss to the increase in the minimum wage. So we're trying to stop the loss of jobs.
And Scott, I mean, and that's exactly, when I read 215-203, it just seems that parts of that are globally competitive environments where I think you get unanimous support for what can we do to help those industries where, as Senator Starr was pointing out before the committee started, there is no margin. There's just no margin. You can't pass it on. And so you're in a very difficult position. But I do see in this definition there are areas, whether it's honeybees or equestrian, that those aren't competitive environments, that Oregon equestrian stabling of horses and riding of horses is just not a globally competitive. And so I think where I come at it is I think I'm going to ask y'all to sit down with Senator Metzger, maybe Senator Starr and Senator Buzanski and Council in about 15 minutes if you can, and just maybe hammer at this one more time. We do want to move, and we're going to, but I would like at least to really get at, especially what we want to get at with this, and not include equestrian and other venues that I just don't think are meet the other traded sector that y'all have spoke to. Other comments or thoughts for the panel?
Comment about the honeybees.
Yes, sir.
You don't know how important the honeybee is to the agricultural industry in Oregon, up and down the Willamette Valley, across the Inland Empire, Columbia River, over into the Adrian area where they have to have the bees for pollinization for the crops. This is one farmers paying a price to rent those bees. The beekeepers have a competitive market for their product. So don't move quickly to eliminate honey production. The bees are... They're so important to Oregon agriculture.
If you're willing to sit at the table in council and help protect all the honeybee producers and others, I think it's important that you're there, Senator Starr, to add that voice.
Well, I'd like to, and we have a pretty full calendar today, but yeah, I'll see what I can do. I really trust agriculturalists that are sitting in the audience too.
Great.
To make those points. But I do have almost 50 years of experience in Oregon agriculture, so I do have kind of an understanding of the whole industry, and I would thankfully take part if I have an opportunity and time.
Okay, well, we're going to try to do that here in about 5 or 10 minutes. Senator Buzanski.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your thoughts as to where you want to go. I'm leaning that way as well. I mean, I'm really kind of surprised to hear how broad this was, because when I spoke with the proponents, we talked about the high-intense labor crops and those issues where you need to maintain those markets, because, as Mr. Schellenberg has said, that farmers will make decisions that if it becomes so costly, they're going to basically give up that crop and move to something else that's going to be more profitable. And that's where I thought that this tax credit was really going to be focused on, were those type of situations. And I think that what is in the Dash 3 that's important is that narrowing that Scott's talked about on the minimum wage only. To me, what I heard when it was in my office was, we're trying to make certain that those who are at the that are struggling to be able to stay in a competitive world, that have minimum wage jobs, are able to still compete because we have indexing. And I'm comfortable trying to give some assistance there, but not as broad as the Dash 3s apparently are written at this point.
So let's pause on that. Employment Department, you have an issue with the Dash 3s also. You just received them. We know. And so you want to come up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tamara Brickman, and I'm the legislative coordinator for the Oregon Employment Department, and I literally was just read, I don't even have a written copy in front of me, I was just read over the phone the draft language. I think it must be in the dash threes. It requires the Employment Department to provide a report on the number of people employed within that definition of farm use. The concern that I have, and it may be that it's okay and it may not be, I have our workforce analyst folks researching whether or not they can report in this manner. The Employment Department only tracks covered employment for purposes of unemployment insurance, and not all agricultural employees are covered for purposes of unemployment insurance. And then also we track by a national industry code, of which I think agriculture is just one big code. So I don't know if we can specifically report and exclude some of these types of I believe that in the definition of 215-203, Christmas tree production is excluded from that definition, but they might still be no.
No, it's in. Actually, it is. I think. Sure. I noticed that. It said farm use does not include the use of land subject to the provisions of RRS 321, except land used exclusively for growing cultured Christmas trees.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Chair Deckert. And I just want to have a chance to have our research people take a look to make sure that we can give you an accurate report as stated in the amendments, and if not, to give you the language with which how we can report to you the number of people employed in that arena. So.
Okay. So we're going to pause on this one. We'll try to consult with y'all as we draft, and if you could stay tuned if we're going to include the Employment Department, because we do want to move forward today if council allows us.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so we do have a motion on the table. Senator Starr, it's your pleasure. We can vote on that motion or withdraw it and let the work group.
Mr. Chair, I think I can count, and so I'm going to withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Do we need to vote on that? Senator Starr, and I appreciate that, has withdrawn that motion. We'll close the work session and ask Don, and if you're free in about 5 minutes, two of our committee members can join you and legislative council, but not three. Close that work session. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2542. Any further testimony from the public on House Bill 2542? And I'm seeing a page that has none. Okay, I don't see any hands waving, so we'll close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2542.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 13 amendments to House Bill 2542.
Senator Metzger has moved the dash 13 amendments to House Bill 2542. Any discussion on 2542?
I guess.
Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I raised a question yesterday in committee about whether or not the dash 13s increased taxes, and I think the answer I got was yes, indeed it did. Do we require a supermajority to pass this across the floor? Mm-hmm. And that's a question that for me is unanswered at this point. And I think it's important to know that, and if we have the ability to reach that supermajority with these amendments.
Okay. We're getting Dexter. But when we asked him, the answer to that question is, but I'll try to buy some time for him. The answer that we received is by disconnecting from certain portions of the federal tax code, and you'll notice that it does not have the revenue impact in it. Lizbeth, I don't know what the exact figure for the revenue impact, but this is not a revenue-raising measure. What's the direct figure?
And Chairman Decker, the reason why is just because we aren't connected yet with this federal legislation, so it doesn't become, positive because we're not going to be connect. We're just not connecting. We're keeping current law as it is. And then what you have here in positive numbers from the American Jobs Creation Act is due to that extraterritorial income that you're connecting to. That's a very big provision, as well as other provisions in the American Jobs Creation Act. That's where you get the $19 million as far as positive in the 2005-07 biennium. But overall, the revenue impact is positive in the first two bienniums, but in the outer biennium, it's negative by more than it's positive in the first two bienniums. And so I think one thing we've been told from council is if your intent of their legislation is not to raise taxes, which the bill has various components and we're just connecting with federal tax law, and the overall end result is positive in one year, negative in other years, then your intent is not to raise taxes. So that was always, and that was what I always heard from council, is one criteria in deciding whether or not the three-fifths is needed.
Here he is. Our questioner is not here. Dexter, you want to? The question that Senator Starr had is this a three-fifths issue on the reconnect bill?
Mr. Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. My conclusion is that the reconnect bill is not, as it's presently constructed, is not a bill for raising revenue requiring three-fifths vote. Because that standard is reserved for those bills, the primary purpose of which is to raise revenue. And here, the primary purpose is to connect to recent changes in federal tax law. And my understanding from LRO staff is that the revenue impact statement that they project for that is a minor increase only, and therefore my conclusion is that that can't be the primary purpose for the bill to raise revenue if the increase is only very minor under, say, $500,000 a biennium.
And current state laws, as Elizabeth mentioned, we're not connected at this point. Therefore, Senator George.
When the original disconnect was passed, was that a three-fifths vote? I was trying to remember that, and I couldn't remember if it was or not. And if it wasn't, could a person come back and say, you know, that was an illegitimate vote, and therefore this is also? I guess you can sue for anything, but I'm just trying to remember. Did any of you remember?
No, it was not. I mean, the original House Bill 2542A in gross had a very big negative revenue impact. So, I mean, even in this first biennium, there was a loss. And then in the outer bienniums, it got quite large. So, overall, the A in gross bill is a very big revenue loss to the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, if I may add, too, you look at that based on what the law is at the time of the passage
right.
of the bill that you want to apply that to. And there, the federal law that you were connecting to was different than it is now.
Right. Okay.
Other thoughts or questions? Thanks, Dexter. Are you the author of Senate Bill 1080, or not the author,
yes.
but the drafter of 1083?
1083, yes.
Okay, so we're going to bug you one more time on that one.
I'll look forward to that.
Thank you.
You will.
Okay, so the Dash 13's other thoughts or questions from the committee are on the table. Just a refresher that our ability to under balancing the budget and getting a balanced budget passed, our ability to do the other tax credits, whether it's the agricultural minimum wage or the earned income, is predicated on us. We have to balance, and so there has to be money on the table to do those. And this is one avenue to get us there. We will call the roll. Any other further discussion on that? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot support this because I'm going to tell you, we have the highest unemployment. We are not seeing the recovery that we all expected. And we made a lot of projections last time based upon the money that we were going to spend for all of the highway projects was going to just spur the economy forward. And yet we see it lagging so far behind every other state. So I believe these things do provide, in fact, stimulus.
Appreciate it. That perspective. I don't know your.
Linda.
Linda, could you please call the roll?
No.
Senator Menzies?
Aye.
Senator Menzies?
Aye.
Senator Scott?
No.
Votes aye.
Senator Mayor, I move House Bill 2542 as amended by the Dash 13 amendments to the floor to be passed recommendation.
Senator Metzger has moved House Bill 2542 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Linda, please call the roll.
Senator George?
No.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator
Sanford?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Votes aye. That passes. I will carry that bill. We will recess until we have floor it. 10, so I would say it's a short floor session. I would say let's recess until 11:30.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do you want to set it instead of by time, maybe by minutes after session? So if we do get off earlier, you could say like 15 minutes after session concludes. That will give it time certain based on the adjournment or the recess of the morning session.
That sounds great to me. That is an option that we could just say we'll recess until 10 minutes following the
morning session.
Okay.
And Senator Tucker, are you waiting for other amendments with 3481? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. We might want to.
That bill, as I mentioned at the start of the meeting, mm-hmm. that bill will be at least looked at this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So we will recess until 10 minutes following the end of business in today's floor session. On the
morning floor. Session.
Mm-hmm. Morning session. Yes, Senator Starr.
Since we've passed this 2442 out, possibility of a minority report, if so, it'll be ready by 5 o'clock today.
Okay, so Senator Starr.
Not at all sure that's going to happen, but if it does, it will be ready by 5 today.
Great. Okay, so Senator Starr and I would assume Senator George are filing a possible minority report on 2542. Thank you. We are in recess. Back from recess for the Senate Revenue Committee. So the two bills that we are discussing right now are Senate Bill 1083, and Senator Metzger, would you like to give us a update on Senate Bill 1083?
Okay, thank you, Chair. I did. I spoke to the proponent, the author of the bill, Senator Schrader, and also spoke to representative of the agricultural industry and met with them with Dexter. And the intent is, with the okay also of the author of the bill, is we will see an amendment tomorrow that goes back to the original language of 1083 as introduced by Senator Schrader. As you see, in narrowing the bill in the Dash 3, we actually raised the cost and added other things that apparently weren't necessary. So we're going to go back to the original language as drafted in 1083. However, in the definition of farm use, we are going to narrow that slightly. In that we will eliminate the equine stabling, horse shows, dog kenneling, things that clearly aren't traded sector issues in agriculture. But the remainder of the agricultural, I think Senator Starr made some good points, will remain in the bill. And Senator Schrader is fine with that, and so are the representatives of the farm industry, and that will be an amendment we'll have for us to consider tomorrow.
Okay, so Paul, let's post that for work session. If we're on the floor at 10, I think we could move these in 30 minutes, so we'll post that at 9:30 tomorrow for a work session. Okay, and then so 3481, let me open a public hearing on that. Matt, do you want to come and talk about, what is it, the 20?
Dash 19s. Chair Decker, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director of the Oregon Environmental Council. Wanted to just clarify, the Dash 19s, which everyone should have at this point, have one small change. They're basically the Dash 17s without the funding for the clean emission school buses part, that fee increase. We took that out per the chair's request, and want to continue to have a discussion about providing funds for that as we move towards conference, but at this point don't want to go in that with that strategy. So I think that's the only change at this point from the dash 17s in the discussion we had yesterday.
Great. Okay, so it had all the governors or most of the governors stuff in there, the original bill, takes out the $5 per pump fee. Questions for Mr. Blevins?
Yes, I have a question.
We have another, I thought we had another amendment that came in regarding methanol.
I think that's a dash 18.
Yeah, there
dash
is.
18, I believe.
Yeah. And who is the author? Do you know who
the
author?
Yeah, that's Representative Anderson. Mm-hmm. So that's a further revision, I think, from the dash B12s, which we had seen the prior day. And that is just basically allowing a methanol production facility to be exempt in the property tax exemption portion. And then but it's amending, so everyone's clear, it's amending the B and gross bill. Okay, so, I mean, you can still bring it forward with any of these other ones that replace the existing bill, but it is also deleting that ban on methanol, but that's only in the B and gross bill. Already in the B19s, you have methanol removed from what is banned in gasoline additives. So you already have
that. And it's in the 19. So this is redundant of what's in the 19.
Well, not entirely, no, because you've got the methanol production facility that clearly gets added in to the B and gross bill. So there would be, council would rectify that language in the B19 with this, because the B19 doesn't add the word production of methanol in that property tax statute here. It's like page 2, line 26. They add the word methanol there.
So. Okay. And just, well, as soon as any other questions from Mr. Blevins, and then we'll see if anyone wants to speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Matt, I understand that one of the provisions of the governor's adoption or movement towards the idea of utilizing the California model is that diesel cars and diesel pickups and stuff like that would actually be eliminated from usage. Is that correct? And wouldn't that have a significant negative effect on the idea of using biodiesel?
Chair Deckert, Senator George, there currently, if you look at the California clean car standards that were currently adopted, my understanding is that current diesel models may not always meet that, although if they're running on biodiesel, they actually would meet those things, but you can't mandate it. But my understanding is that if you go with the timeline of 2009-2010 where those provisions would be adopted, actually the understanding is that diesel vehicles will meet those requirements at that point, so it shouldn't be problematic given the timeline that we're talking about. That's my understanding.
It's not a ban on the sales. It's a ban on them if they don't meet the standards.
Exactly. It has no provisions that specifically address. It's always about emissions. But, again, nothing in this bill deals with that one way or another. So, and, again, if those vehicles are running 100% biodiesel at this point, they would meet those standards, is my understanding.
Senator Brzezinski, did you have a question?
Just clarification, if I could. The 19, are we looking at the 19s at this point?
19s. And then,
okay. And the 19 basically brings in the 18, is incorporated into it?
No.
Not enough.
No. We need the 18.
Chair Deckard, if I can clarify, and Senator Brzezinski. My understanding is the 18, what we have in the 19s and had in the 17s was the removal of methanol from the ban of fuel additives. 18 did that, and that's redundant, but it also added the methanol plants to the siting exemption that's also embodied in 17 and 19 for ethanol and biodiesel plants. So that.
All right. And then the pump surcharge or the $5 fee is out in the 19s?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else for Mr. Blevins? Thank you. Senator Starr.
The major objection I have is the mandate. I still have that.
Mr. Chair, I thought that was one of the things that was contemplated of being coming out through these various amendments.
We did talk about it. Here's my feeling just in general on this, is that I think, given the testimony of Representative Anderson, we're going to go to conference committee. And so, to me, a lot of this, including the methanol, on that dash B18s, I'm happy to include it. What I told the folks yesterday, because no one had great heartburn either way on it, is it's also an easy one for conference committee to deal with. But I'd be happy for us to handle the 18s here. But I do want to, my intention was to get this in conference, and that's why we're continuing to meet on it, is to get it into conference as soon as we can to get this thing worked
okay.
out. But I don't think we should do it today. I think we should wait so that, because these 19s are new, I don't think any of us have read them.
Nope.
That's right.
We just got them. So I think we should wait till
tomorrow,
till 9:30 tomorrow, and give everyone a day and all the interested parties a day to look them over, and then try to move that at 9:30 tomorrow.
Sounds good to me.
And Senator Deckard, you also have the B-15s, too, with the TriNet issue, with the pollution control tax credit being transferred for those retrofit of their buses. So that needs to, that is not in your B-19.
I am aware of that.
Okay.
And the plan tomorrow, since we got three bills that we're going to be working, two bills?
Uh-huh. So we'll come back tomorrow to, we'll have, on the agenda will be 3481 and 1083 at 9:30, and I'll just post them for a work session.
Do we know when floor is going to start tomorrow?
We're just assuming 10 a.m.
There was discussion
I'm
of...
I'm going to have a meet at 9 and then have a break.
Yeah, I'm with you.
In case they come in earlier.
Yeah, there was some discussion that we may actually come in earlier.
Okay, so I'm going to put... Well, here's what I'll do. If we're going to meet at 9, I'll just... Because I know a couple of us are leaving right now. What I'll do is I'll post... If we're meeting at 10, we'll post for 9:30 so that we work with the floor session. If we're meeting at 9, I'll probably post us for following the floor session, because I don't think we have a great deal of work to do tomorrow. We're either going to move these amendments out, the 19s, and the amendments that we get on 1083, or we're not. But so I'll either post us, if it's 10, I'll post us at 9:30. If it's not, I'll post us for right after floor session.
Sounds good.
We do like player select to be named later. Time to
sounds good to me.
Time to be. It'll be one of those two. That's right. That's right. Okay, we are. I'm gonna close. Did anyone else want to speak on 3481? I can open the public hearing. Close public hearing. We're adjourned to.